The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Networks.
Welcome to the radio show, Connected, brought to you by BTC. I'm your host, Lester R. Cox. Folks, Connected is an ideas-driven show with a global perspective that links difference makers and forward thinkers, and we put them in conversations about life, politics, and pop culture. I believe we talk because we have something to say. We should listen because there are things we don't know and can learn. When you put talking and listening together, great things can happen. Because in that small space, between talking and listening, change, new possibilities can occur. I invite you to show up in some public space, step in and speak up. Even if your voice shakes, our collective greatness depends on it. More importantly, the answers that we seek, they're already in us. First, the Spotlight Memo. Say what you want to say. Folks, what a country we live in, man. Love living in the Bahamas. This place generates so much news, it's just unbelievable. But I can tell you something. Even though we generate an incredible amount of news, when you run a national talk show like me, you not only have a lot of fun, you learn a lot of stuff, you talk to a lot of interesting people, but sometimes though, if you're not a liar, there are shows where you just have nothing. Nothing is there. You have a big, fat, nothing burger day. It happens to talk show hosts that are not liars. Well, I'm not saying that I have nothing today, but I'm just saying it happens. And folks, I want you to think about something. I got a couple things to tell you this morning. I want to share two words with you. So one of my guests, they were trying to help me pronounce the word. I think the word is De minimis, right? And the second word I want to share with you today is nothing burger. Now, the minimis word, that's just obvious. But the nothing burger one is more interesting. So if you go over and read the IMF Mission 4 report on the Bahamas, it will show you absolutely three things. And I don't think any intelligent person can disagree with these three things that report shows you. First thing it shows you that the Christie administration from 2012 to 2017 had a big, fat, nothing burger. The Ingram administration from 2007 to 2012 had a big, fat, nothing burger. Just read it. All you color-wearing, election-winning people. 10 years of nothing. Because the IMF Mission 4 report for the last 10 years was exactly the same. Think about that. Now, if you go back even 5 more years, it's the same thing, a big, fat, nothing burger. When you listen to the IMF Mission 4 conclusion with our country, and we had the same technical people sitting at the table, with the exception of the new government, it's the same big, fat, nothing burger. Our elections for the last 15, 20 years have been about nothing. Corruption, a little bit of crime, a little bit of boundaries commission, that's it. They have been about nothing. We have an economy that's growing at 1.39% for the last 30 years. Folks, that's a big, fat, nothing burger. So we've got to encourage this government to don't BS us because you guys have nothing. So what we've got to do as a country is we've got to come together and figure out how we're going to grow this economy. Because you guys have nothing. Christie had nothing. Ingram had nothing. So, we can't play around now. Because if we stay on the path that we're on, we can continue to have this big, fat, nothing burger. The second thing I want to tell you is, if you listen to the IMF, these are the same guys who have been giving you nothing burger advice for 15 years. One thing I know for sure, when you run in the country, there are three groups of people you should never listen to. Don't listen to accountants. Don't listen to lawyers. And don't listen to economists. Because those three groups of people know nothing about how to run a country. As evidenced by the fact that they have been giving us advice for the last 20, 30 years. Now, if you like data, just go look at the data and see if you could disagree with me. The same thing applies to the technical people at the Ministry of Finance who have been sitting at those meetings. The same people at the Ministry of Finance and the Central Bank who have been sitting in those meetings. You see, now, we're going to fix the Bahamas or we're not. You know, we like to talk about places like Finland, and we'd like to talk about how great their education system is. Well, the country of Finland, they ran into a big nothing burger problem a couple years ago. And you know what they did? They didn't call the IMF. They didn't call lawyers. They didn't call economists. You know what they did? They asked the world to give us some ideas about how to fix Finland. That's what you do when you have a nothing burger. So F&M government, you guys know you have a nothing burger. So let's go out there and ask the people of this country and the world to help us fix growth in this country. No more time for BSing around. I want you to think about that. And those of you color-wearing people out there who challenging me on this point, let's hear your points. I posted it on Facebook. I posted on Facebook the IMF conclusions with the people in our government who were sitting at the table, the technical people who were sitting at the table for years and years, and with the new government. You're not going to lie to the IMF. Just read what they say. You think about it. And now, today's poll question. Here we go. Simple one for you. Can we safely conclude, after reading the IMF Mission 4 with our government, that there's nothing there and we need to come together as a country to grow the next Bahamas? I'm looking for three responses from you today. Yes, Lester, we got to come together. No, bro. We got something. We just ain't telling you. Or, Lester, think about this. The numbers to call if you want in on this conversation, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, my text line, 422-4796. All right, let's see what people are saying. Interesting, Gilbert Morris. The very idea that in a low-growth environment with indisciplined spending, just 30 months after implementing a massive tax raise, yet another tax is the solution, is the stuff that ferments revolutions. The idea that banks fear to lend in a low growth environment rather than reveals a boneheaded misunderstanding of how actual economies work beyond mere theory. Doc, I agree with you. Those guys at IMF, they just clueless. I mean, like, why would you listen to such ignorant advice? Why would you listen to, I mean, the IMF, these fellas running the world, and they would tell a government like ours, we just implemented VAT. We're a country that's not growing. They would tell the government, fix your fiscal position and let the economy tank. Well, folks, if the business environment and the people of the country don't pay into the government, well, where is the government going to get that money? So the IMF recommended that we tank our economy to fix the government. Well, how retarded can you be? But anyway, I digress. Let me read two more texts. This is just unbelievable. I don't know how people like the IMF could fix their mouth to give countries like ours such stupid advice. It's unbelievable. All right, here we go. The government should look at income tax. VAT is a regressive tax. All right, come on. Yeah, you look at these same fellas who's talking this nonsense. The rich oligarchs don't want income tax because they would have to pay their fair share. No. The rich oligarchs know that more taxes is just stupid. Like them or hate them, the IMF influences the financial economic issues of the country. Yes, they do, to our detriment. The technical people can be sitting at the table for decades, but they have the competence to do, I guess you're saying they don't have the competence to do anything. Most people you see in positions in government are there because they support a political party. And that is true, and we are seeing more and more evidence for that. People who work in government, they are just there because somebody put them there, or they're career people, and they've got no specific ideas about how to fix things. And folks, we got to change that, man. You know, I want you to think about that, folks. This ain't political. This show is not political. This show is about facts, data, and ideas. Think about it. All right, Simba. This is Idea Friday. Okay, folks, this is Idea Friday. I guess something like that, Idea Friday. People don't want to be here. Folks, we've got in the studio today, we've got Ideas Woman, PR extraordinaire, businesswoman. She'd been here a long time. You know, Di was the first, like, she was like the first mayor. See, you didn't know that. Of Bay Street.
Always a mayor.
The great Di Phillips. Di, always a pleasure to have you in studio.
Good morning. I always thought of it as kind of the mother hen of Bay Street, but or the mother of Sunday shopping.
Yeah, yeah. See, you can't go mother hen. Maybe, and you see mother Sunday shopping, you don't have that title.
Well, I worked hard to get it, but I, far more important than that, a lot of what you said this morning, Lester, made so much sense. I think where we're missing the boat with growing the economy is not how do we tax more so we put more money into government coffers so that they can provide the infrastructure and the other utilities and all the needs that we have.
Right.
How do we incentivize businesses and ideas so that there can be economic diversification, environmental protection and management, and a growth in all sorts of industries? Now, there are a couple of avenues that you can take. First of all, one of the reasons that I believe, and I could be totally wrong, I stand to be corrected, but I believe that one of the reasons we haven't seen more change is that nothing much has changed about how we educate young people. So we don't educate them to think that they can go into business. They don't know, most graduate from school or leave school without knowing how to balance a checkbook.
True.
They don't understand that they can be partners in a private enterprise, that they can be owners, or that they can take great pride in whatever job they have. They're just taught to get by, get out, get by, get some kind of work, and put some money in a mattress or in an ASU or whatever.
Right. The financial literacy is not
financial
there.
Financial literacy is not there. The belief that you can be an owner and that you can create. We're not playing to the idea of ideas.
Right. I think you need to think about that a little bit more, in the sense that even if you have an idea in this country, it makes no difference because the structure don't allow that idea to flow.
Well, part of the problem, and you're right about that, but part of the problem is the lack of access to capital. We've talked about this many times. It is so hard to start a new business unless you have family behind you or you have some unique way to raise money. That's why I loved what Sebas and them did with the OWN thing, where you pitch an idea.
And people like Sebas, they have been some of the most creative in this environment. And I know some people have some issues with what they do, but we have to find ways for people who've got ideas that we can't think about. We have to let them run as well.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. But let's go back to the education system. What is it that we can do to really shake it up? We know that class sizes are too large. We know that the kids do not have enough exposure. You know, one of the reasons that I went into journalism about 250 years ago was that as a kid, our class had the privilege of going to a newspaper. And I was living in Philadelphia at the time, but I'll never forget the experience.
Right.
And we went to the Philadelphia Inquirer, and I saw reporters there. And in those days, and even in the days when I first started, every reporter had a styrofoam cup of ancient coffee and four more cups there, and cigarettes going all the time. You know, the newsroom was just a smoke-filled den of curiosity. But when we went downstairs and we saw the papers coming off the press, it was just amazing the way that the printing took place and how they were folded and stacked. And I was absolutely fascinated by upstairs, all these people are gathering news, and downstairs it's already being printed. And in a couple of hours, it would be out on the streets. And in those days, you still had afternoon papers because you didn't have online news. You didn't have BuzzFeed or Facebook or anything. So you couldn't get the New York Times online. So people driving home from work would stop and get the afternoon printed newspaper.
Interesting. But you know, I think we've got to figure out something. We've got to do something different, because we can't fix this country doing what we've done for the last 20 years.
No, we live in a digital. We are living in a digital age, and we are acting as if we're still back.
Like we're in 2017. Sorry, 1917, not 2017.
Like looking forward to our afternoon newspaper.
I was thinking just yesterday that, you know how JFK talked about landing a man on the moon. First of all, when he made that speech, that couldn't happen. They didn't have the skills to make that happen, but he made the speech anyway.
You know, in that book, Profiles in Courage, that he authored, he talks so much about thinking ahead and having the courage to say it, even if it doesn't exist now. Courage is largely the feeling, the belief that you can make something happen.
Correct. And that's the one skill that our leaders have not had, and one skill that we need now. Because think about the man in the moon project that we've had in the Bahamas so far. So the UBP wanted to have internal self-government. When they got that, you know what the first thing they did?
What?
They changed the currency from pounds to dollars.
Everyone says that is the most brilliant decision.
No question about it. But that was a man in the moon kind of project.
Yes.
Right? Now think about this. When the minority in this country looked at what the UBP were doing with on the political side, one man, they wanted one man, one vote. Mm-hmm. They wanted women to vote. They wanted the majority to run the country. That's another man on the moon project. And it happened. So when the majority got the power, you know what they did with it? They decided we were going to become an independent country. Mm-hmm. Think about that. Two man in the moon projects in a small country like that. Now, Zai, we in 2017. There must be some kind of man on the moon project that we can do. Because first of all, we're as rich as we've ever been. We're as educated as we've ever been. So we've got a lot of skills in this country. So we need some kind of man in the moon project for this country.
Tag me in, Coach. Tag me
in. Yeah, don't agree. You can't talk till you get it to do. Hold on.
Okay, I'm going to say one thing, then we're going to bring him in. Okay, Lester? I think we actually have an opportunity. Mm-hmm. What's happening on Ragged Island is a brilliant opportunity. Mm-hmm. I understand that the spirit of Ragged Island. In fact, it was a Ragged Islander who was my closest.
I guess it's ruggedy.
It's rugged. It's pioneering. It's we didn't need government before. We don't need them. But guess what?
Right.
This is a different world. This is not the same world that it was 25 years ago. Climate change has made for rising seas and warmer seas. We're going to get more and more powerful, intense storms that are going to come up out of the ocean. They don't have to come off Africa anymore. They can form right in the ocean just outside
our
waters. And they boil and boil and boil, and as they roll and swirl towards us and barrel at us, we have to be better protected. Now, what can happen on Ragged Island? Remember, the population of Ragged Island is estimated now at less than 100. Some have said 72.
Yeah, probably like 55.
72 people, yeah. Okay? So if there are a dozen there now who don't want to be evacuated, I say we have to make it mandatory. It's not pleasant, but they need to buy into it so it's not a forced evacuation. So they understand they are going to get to go back, because the government is going to help rebuild Ragged Island with an entire green environment using coastal zone management techniques that have not been used here before, where if you have, like the one that Carlos Palacios was talking about the other day. So you've got this team of environmental engineers who understand that when you build on the coast, you have to build up high. Why is it that there are places in the Pacific, for instance, where they know that the waters are going to flow through, so you are 10 feet above the
ground. You know the water coming, but you're not trying to stop it and you're not trying to get out of it.
Right. So you build up high on pillars, and yes, you have to access it by a series of steps, but guess what? You're going to have a house that's going to survive it if you want to live somewhere near the coast. So every island will need a central building. That building would act as a hurricane shelter, in times of emergency, but it can also serve as a church, it can serve as a community center, could even be the school, it could be where the events are held, just as they're doing in with the ACL Hall in Acklands, they're trying to create that one central
place. Make it stronger,
place. Yeah. So Ragged Island has this opportunity now to become a model for the region.
An experiment. Well, also the government should not pretend as if they have the idea. They should open it up so that people can give them ideas as well.
Very well, very, very well said. I agree totally.
Good.
Can we bring in our guest?
Yes, yes. Simba, give me a drum roll. Folks, this show is called Connected. And on this show, you got to fight for the mic, and you can't talk until we introduce you. We don't care how good the conversation is.
Yeah, that's tough for the gentleman.
I know. Folks, we got in the studio with us today. We've got a man who, he showed me how to pronounce the word de minimis.
I want to know if it actually is a word.
It is, well,
did you
it is
look
a word.
It up?
Yeah, it is
two
a word.
It's two words?
Two Latin words.
All right, so I guess he'll give us the history of the word right
as
now.
As soon as you hurry up.
Right, good. As soon as I introduce him. Matt Aubrey. Matt is the key person for the Organization for Responsible Government. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, see, I know
so much of what you're talking about today has quite relevance and de minimis, although we learned out there that actually two Latin words, de minimis, means insignificant impact. And the truth is there's very little right now that we're talking about that is de minimis, because everything we're talking about has a pretty significant impact. The Organization for Responsible Governance, first off, thanks for having us. You know we're working on issues of good governance here in the Bahamas,
right.
And we're looking at the linkage between accountable governance and legislation that is open and transparent. We're looking at the key role that education has. We can't have a D-minus GPA if we expect an A-plus system of governance.
Right.
Neither can we expect that good governance happens if we don't have a vibrant economy. So these three things are all linked.
Let me write down those three things again. Let's see. Say them in slow motion.
So accountable governance.
Accountable. So that's transparency. The government shouldn't be telling the IMF stuff. You shouldn't be telling the IMF one thing in these private meetings and then talking a different thing when they're in public.
Open, participatory, transparent. That's the key to accountable governance.
So that's one. What's the second one?
Education. Education, having an educated populace opens up our potential as a country and ensures that things like accountable governance can happen, but it also ensures that we can have a vibrant and growing economy.
We can't have
a D-minus.
No, hold on. So first is accountability, second is education, and what's the third one?
Economic development.
All right. So we shouldn't be taxing people and the economy growing at 1.39%.
So, and I think of what you look at, this is one of those instances where people are jumping on one thing. So the IMF report that talked about income tax, everybody's jumping on that.
That's stupidness.
But if you look, wait a minute. If you look at all the other things that they talk about, they talk about the fact that we need to tackle energy. They talk about the fact that we need to minimize government debt. They talk about that we need to find development opportunities to grow the economy. All of those things are not only things that my organization, organizations like NASA Institute, organizations like IDB,
die fighting for the mic now.
Save the base.
Have all been talking about that's the formula. So I don't think you've talked about it on a number of cases. So I don't think the key is, that they're coming in here and not getting an assessment. Because the truth is, and I always say this, we all know the car's broken. But the problem is we're all working at it from different ends, right? We're all in different directions. So we need to line up behind one strategy and push forward. When you look at something like a suggestion of income tax, I think our take on it is there's so much that we haven't dealt with on the foundations yet. We're not looking at the compliance of our existing tax. We didn't put in place for VAT what was recommended to have a Freedom of Information Act, which ensures that citizens have a voice and an understanding of how we're spending. We didn't put in things like a Fiscal Responsibility Act, which ensure that government spending has to be ultimately capped and be done in a responsible way.
Right.
And so if we're now talking about or entertaining a thought of another level of tax, and we haven't worked on these fundamental things,
or
even the issue of corruption. That's one of our areas that we address. The wastage that happens based on corruption. If we haven't tackled that, if we haven't really moved forward in that, to then go ahead and say, "Hey, let's address this other level of taxation."
Give the government more money to blow, like the VAT thing that the PLP administration put on, and I think that's the greatest thing that they did. We collected more than enough VAT to close the previous deficits that they were talking about. But we didn't manage government spending.
Which is why they had recommended those two policies. And we didn't follow through with that yet.
And Matt, what are you hearing about the status of the Freedom of Information Act and the financial responsibility or accountability legislation? Because my sources are telling me that freedom of information is not a priority and that you'll be lucky if you see it midway through.
The government is saying freedom of information is not a priority.
No, they're not saying that publicly. Now, your sources are telling me that it is not a priority at this time and would be lucky to see it halfway through if it's even brought up then.
You mean halfway through this administration?
This administration.
From what we've, and we've spent a lot of time tracking this, we have a very, very unique circumstance at the moment in that our Freedom of Information Act was passed by both houses, and it was not enacted fully. So there was an enactment of two components. One, which was the hiring of the first point was the repeal of the 2012 act that had been passed, which basically renders that's done. So it now opens up that this act can be enforced. The first step was the hiring of the information commissioner. And I guess the rationale at that stage was once the information commissioner is hired, they will then roll out and determine a lot of the other levels of regulations because there are a number of pieces of this and then start to push it forward.
But shouldn't the regulations be part of the act and not something that the information commissioner decides?
Well, and I don't think it means rewriting the act. I think it means that when pieces would come in force, and again, this isn't my rationale, this is what we, in a lot of discussions, we come to understand. And again, this is from a prior administration, that in the pushing forward for enforcement, a lot of these components of the act have implications.
But
I will say that when I looked at line by line the budget that was passed in 2000 earlier this year,
July 1st.
Indication I saw for Freedom of Information was $100,000 that was allocated under the antiquities component. And I'm not sure, that's the only thing that had the words Freedom of Information. So I'm not sure where the funding would come from for hiring, for the level of public education. There's a lot that needs to happen. So I don't see the funding in that space.
If there's no funding provision and the government is strapped for money and the costs from Hurricane Irma are going to add to the government's constraints, and we haven't seen an austerity plan yet other than asking ministries to cut back 10%.
We did have a number of conversations though across the summer where we did and continue to talk about freedom of information, and my indication or my understanding is that it will come up in this fall session. So I think the dilemma then becomes two things. One, you would have recalled that with freedom of information there were a number of recommendations that were put forward from civil society. We worked together with over 22 different organizations collaborating, having input. That would have represented a conservative number of about 100,000 Bahamians, people who live and work here, who had a say-so and a stake in this. And the recommendations that were put forward, about 7 were accepted into the current act. There were a few key ones that we still wanted to push forward. And so
including the independence of
the information commissioner. There was the issue of a timely response. There was the issue of including and broadening the scope of what public authority would be so that
that's really critical. Right. Can you describe that again?
Do it when you come back.
I think
folks, you're listening to Connected with Lester Cox. Today's show brought to you by BTC. We've got Mr. Matt Aubrey in studio, the man who knows how to pronounce de minimis.
Well, I hope he knows a lot more than that. It'd be a shame to just think Matt Aubrey, the man who knows how to pronounce whatever that word is.
All right. Die Phillips in studio, back in a moment.
Double your data with BTC Mobile. When you sign up for a $25 plan, you will receive 12 gigs of data. Or sign up with a $35 data plan and receive 30 gigs of data now until the end of November. All you have to do is dial *205#. Select your plan and experience limitless data with BTC Mobile. Because when you're a part of the BTC family, the possibilities are limitless. BTC Mobile, the bigger, better network.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Here's an idea for you. See yourself as an artist when you go to work every day. See yourself as someone who gets to create a masterpiece through your work regardless of what you do. I think every single one of us has a need for creative expression. We all have in our hearts a longing to go to work every day and to create. That's part of what makes us special. Actually, let me put it this way. We all have a creative longing to realize our potential. It's one of the most fundamental of all human hungers.
Early in the morning, as the sun is dawning, I go to the well to get my water today. Get my wood from the bush to make my tea and eat my bread till I fill my belly. Then I get ready to go outside and play. Get my friends from next door to run with me to the store to get some salt beef and flour for mama to cook. We pick some limes from the tree and we pick some sapodilly. Then we make some switcher to drink to wash down the food. My behavior thing.
Yeah, folks, welcome back to Connected. We got you somebody here, you loud and clear. We're talking with Matt Aubrey. Matt is the king of Organization for Responsible Government.
We've
got governance. We've got Diane Cedio. She is the queen of ideas. You know, interesting.
So, you know, but we agreed on several things. We agree that education really is at the root of ideas. Because if you have a child, I don't care if the child is 6 or 9 or older, a teenager, who doesn't think that he or she can contribute anything. Even if they have an idea, they won't do anything with it. So you've got to encourage a population. I think that the current Minister of Education, Jeff Lloyd, is absolutely onto something when he says every kid should have a tablet or access to a computer.
You know what Jeff Lloyd need to be on? He need to be on getting this conversation from a D conversation to a C conversation. Because Jeff Lloyd, those, the people at the Ministry of Education, they're the ones with the silly system where we're talking about a D. If the median grade is a D, the median grade should be a C so that we have a better conversation in the bomb.
At the end of the day, though, the particular grade is not in what we look at, particularly in the link on economic development. Mm. The grade isn't determinant as much as what the outcome is. And
true.
So one of the things
But Matt, you'll agree, though, that if we have a D conversation, if you and I talking, so when people hear D, they think dumb.
Sure.
So if you say in your grade point average is dumb, you can only have dumb conversations.
But when you look at the most recent results that they put forward, and it wasn't very specific, and I think it's important, and again, going back to that IMF thing, one of the things they talked about in the IMF report is the importance that our data and our statistics need to be much sharper, much clearer, and much more on track.
So, and we need, the people
because they will know what where we're at.
And
right?
The people who produce our data need to stop making excuses.
Right. So when you look at the latest report, you see a large proportion of folks in the C and D and below range. And when you look at BGSCs, you look at such a small level of A's and B's in key steps, in key areas like literacy and numeracy. So you may have gotten an A in Spanish, and there's nothing to diminish that. You may have gotten an A in another key area, another subject. But if you don't address literacy and numeracy, where that translates, and that's where what Diane was talking about is so key, is you have people coming out and they can't fill out a job application. You have people coming out and they can't follow basic instructions. So we need to link education and vocational success. The only ways to promote our economy is to have a viable workforce. And if we don't develop one locally, then you've got to import one. And our focus is that local
development. But a huge part of that, though, is that's where the business community needs to step up and stop making excuses as well.
But it can't be. And that's a problem. Again, we look at each sector as if they have some distinct separate responsibility. Right. The truth is, it's all linked up.
So you got to link it.
We did some research earlier this year. We put out a report. People can check it out on orgbahamas.com. Or check us out on our Facebook at Org Bahamas Foundation. And that report basically talks about the necessity of making that link. So one of the ideas we have put forward was, you heard a lot about apprenticeships, but secondary school apprenticeships, really looking at taking folks in 10th, 11th, and 12th grade and matching their education to a vocational objective.
That's what I talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And you see, that's the problem in the Bahamas and our business people, they make excuses as well. If you step up in your business and you invite high school kids to come in and do things, you don't have to have that complaint.
But it's not even a matter of onus, it's a matter of practicality. If you're a business owner and you've seen what comes out of the public education system, you're going to become quite skeptical about what that is. So we have to talk about reinvestment from both sides. What you see is that, and the apprenticeship model, the secondary school apprenticeship model we saw, is drawn out of places like Singapore and Switzerland, which you could say, well, that's not going to work here. However,
let me stop here. Now, this is interesting
because between these two gentlemen, one each trying to get the mic, because they're both so sure of their idea. Can I boil this down to something very simple, and then you all can attack?
The smartest one in the room.
I doubt it. Probably
just she's the best looking one.
Absolutely. Thank you. I think that what you have to instill in students is not just the information, but the belief that they can make a difference, that they matter. And so if you have a class that is different from other classes, you hold it outside under a beautiful banyan tree or a lignum vitae, and you're talking about what can we do to make sure that our environment is greener all around? And they come up with ideas, and then they decide to plant a garden. They all now feel like they have a sense of ownership, and they feel important. We keep using the word diminish on this show, and maybe there's a reason for it. I think we diminish our students by putting them in large classrooms, yelling at them when they don't do something right, not saying, okay, let's explore ideas. Let's talk about a novel way. If you were prime minister, what would you do differently?
What's interesting is Young Marine Explorers, Nikita Shilroll, she works with folks on environment, but she works with at-risk youth, and she has one of her exercises that they do just that. If you were leading the country and you had X money to invest, and for as many of these folks, this is the first time they've even thought about the fact that they, one, could have a role or have any sort of addressing the larger picture issues. But I do want to say this, though. I think, again, we got to think about the conditions. So Bahamian youth are resilient and smart, and they know where to put their time. And they're also not going to spend time on stuff they don't generally think will translate to an end result. So when you have 25 to 35% youth unemployment, when people are coming out and there's not jobs for them.
There are other market jobs where you know, the guy sitting on the wall gets an offer from the guy down the block who says, you know, for $50 you run this little errand for me, and then they've shown
and IDB showed this, that in the Caribbean, if you look at there was expected the link to say that if you create jobs, crime will go down. That's not true. If you create jobs that are meaningful, that have some sort of merit, and people feel positive about them, they will. One of the things that I worked on...
Say that again, because we know that a lot of people who in Fox Hill, they had a job when they committed the crime, right?
But it's not a job that they feel has any meaning.
They wanted a better job.
They wanted a value to it. It's not, I mean, if you don't feel like it's going to go anywhere, if it's a basic menial job and there's no value in what you're doing, then it doesn't change any behavior pattern. One of the things when I had worked, I had the benefit of, or the pleasure of running the the old Bahamar Foundation and their volunteer initiatives. And I worked closely with Jeff Lloyd when he was there on their Leadership Development Institute. And that was a 16-week bootleg focus. And it was very smart by Bahamar at the time because they were looking at how do we import a new workforce. They had a mandate that they had to be Bahamian, and they targeted folks over the hill. And they took over the hill at-risk youth, and they brought them in, and they gave them 16 weeks with very clear parameters. If you mess up once, twice, you're out. And then, and if you were late, you're out. And if you were dressed inappropriately, you were out. But they brought in 1,200 folks, and they graduated 1,100. And the reason that people kept into it and
made that transformation, along with the cost?
16 weeks. The reason that they translated is because at every step, they constantly focused on the fact that if you got out of this, you would have a job at what was determined the biggest and the brightest new project in the Bahamas. And that kept people on track. And you saw folks who came from the other side of the corrections system that then made this transformation and were ready to be on the job.
Is anybody following them now, Matt?
I know that there was some follow-up. I haven't been involved in the project, so I'm not sure.
It would be very interesting. Mm-hmm. And maybe, does the LDI still exist?
I don't think the LDI exists. Anecdotally, I know a number of them that have continued to go on. And to your point, some of them have now moved towards in a more entrepreneurial effort. Uh-huh. Some have looked at how they can track themselves in a job. But what's true about everyone that I know is they're not satisfied with just doing the same old and the basics or getting they want a job, but they want more.
Matt, you involved in a lot of these IDB things and IMF. Mm-hmm. And, when I look at most of their ideas, it's just to me, it's just pure practical nonsense. And I tell you what. Think about Finland, for instance, and how we talk about Finland education system and how we look at it in a vacuum. But Finland is organized into cities and districts. And you could easily get a district in Finland having an international competition for their airport and asking the world to make it better. We very rarely see any ideas from the IMF or the IDB where they are promoting the idea that we should decentralize our country into economic zones. And wherever they are from, this is how the place that they live in, this is how it's organized. And I don't know why they don't give us, why they don't see that there's a huge difference between where they live and how we are organized.
The reality is, if you look at, and I'm not as familiar with the IMF, but we have sat and consulted with some of the IDB projects. Many of the ideas that they have presented and projects do come from the orientation that these are things that are working elsewhere. I will say it's important to recognize.
Right, but working elsewhere in the context of cities and not just purely central government.
Well, yes, but I think the fundamentals of our central government we're still working on, right? I mean, if corruption is running rampant in our central government and we set up a local government, we haven't addressed some of those basic things, what's to say the local government is going to be
any different?
No, but
Matt, this is what I want you to think about. So you have corruption everywhere you go.
No, not the same degree.
Show me in America, for instance. You got some serious systemic corruption at every level in
the society. Well, so I had the experience of being in New York in the late 80s, early 90s, right, and throughout. And you couldn't think of a more corrupt at every level mm-hmm. place than New York. I mean, right. New York city council members or borough presidents or all they ran things like mafia capos. I mean, right. you had to pay your homage to get your basics are. And they worked on a process where they systemically looked at addressing local local and state level corruption, and they're still working on it now. But all those things you would have seen, the Elliot Spitzers and the Silvers and all those folks are there. It's a process. When we look at what we want to address, we can't start with the end goal. And it's also important it's also important to realize that you got to look at who we are as a country. When you look at a scale of innovation, right, and you look, we are not the early adopters, right?
Let me tell you why you have to think about what you're saying. I'm serious, because we got the data to show that the stuff that IDB has been proposing for 20 years in the Bahamas, it just doesn't work. So if you're looking at fixing central government corruption before you decentralize, we got the data to show it doesn't work.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that countries like people have personalities. We put four of us in a room. Mm-hmm. You say, you know what? Let's all go skydiving. One person's going to say, hey, I'm jumping out the plane. The other one says, I'm staying on the ground.
This is why you need to decentralize first. So you give people in different zones economic power to do their own thing. And this is how ideas can bubble up from nowhere. This is how you can see. Let me give you an example.
I don't dispute that. I think everything can be workable and functional as long as two things are in place. One, that there's a strategy that we're following. Because this whole thought of we're going to throw it up on the wall and see what sticks, and then we'll go with that.
Right.
It's too dispersed. And the second is ultimately that people feel like there is going to be an end goal. Because right now we're all spinning our wheels and not necessarily knowing what we're going to get.
So the end goal should be economic zones with different power bases. Sean A. Miller, for instance, Stevie Gardner, all these Rhodes Scholars that we have, all these talented Grammy Award-winning behemoths. So we know that talent is dispersed across this country. And we need to find different ways to let that talent bubble up without having to filter it through central government. And this is, I think this, until we fix that, I think we're going to have a huge problem for decades.
I agree with you totally that we need to decentralize. I also agree with Matt. But corruption thrives where other opportunity is limited.
Mm-hmm.
And with this new anti-corruption unit, making public the impact of having been corrupt will change the mindset. It will set, you could never prove that the death penalty is a deterrent to murder, because most capital crimes occur in passionate moments.
Right,
they're
right.
Not planned ahead, so we don't stop and think, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that because I'm going to be put to death.
Right.
But if you warn people about corruption, that they are going to be embarrassed, they're going to be humiliated.
If they get caught,
they're going to walk up the steps with in handcuffs, and they're going to be shamed, and they may eventually be fined or even jailed. People will think twice.
It's definitely a component of how you address this. We've done a lot of research over the summer, and we put out a position paper that a number of civil society groups have also joined on us, looking at the fact that there needs to be a multi-sector body that's going to be addressing this ongoingly. And that draws from precedents like in the UK, in India, in South Africa, in Trinidad, in Jamaica. You see that there are bodies that work on this. And they look at just that. They look at what are the ultimate consequences, how are these investigated and enforced. Are the legislative components that are in place sufficient, and are there other things, like for us, an Ombudsman Act, a Whistleblowers Act, really putting teeth on something like a Public Disclosures Act? These are going to be critical. But then the third component really is public education and looking at the practices. Because although we somehow equate that everybody will tell you before all this that corruption is rampant in the Bahamas, but when it's actually addressed, people are kind of shocked. And it's addressed on high as a key message to those going below. But that's not changing anybody when you go to road traffic says,
by the way,
give me a on the side, you got to go to customs and you're not getting your thing out if there's not some sort of exchange. That's the kind of behavior that we have to bring out. So openness and transparency is going to be key to this. And public
participation is going to be... We need to get people thinking about not so much freedom of information like what you guys like, but just this idea that you ought to be transparent.
Well, and it's key.
And you don't need no law to be transparent. You just need to be transparent.
Well, I think that's true. I think that there's also lots of our informal practices that don't support that.
Yeah,
we're
secrecy.
A small closed system. When you think about something like a whistleblower's legislation, even if we had an act that said, you could be protected as a whistleblower, how likely would you be if the three of us really make up the whole department and we know Diane's doing something?
Right.
Would you and I really say it? Because
we know
it's Diane and she knows us and she's related to us on our father's side. And we have to figure out how we get through that stuff too. And that's where the work on public education and addressing this culture of corruption will be key.
Good. Folks, you're listening to Connected with Lester Alcox. Today's show brought to you by BTC. We've got Matt Aubrey in studio. Di Phillips, back in a moment.
Double your data with BTC Mobile. When you sign up for a $25 plan, you will receive 12 gigs of data. Or sign up for the $35 data plan and receive 30 gigs of data now until the end of November. All you have to do is dial *205#. Select your plan and experience limitless data with BTC Mobile. Because when you're a part of the BTC family, the possibilities are limitless. BTC Mobile, the bigger, better network.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Yeah, folks, welcome back to Connected. We've got Di Phillips in the studio, Miss Ideas, and then we've got Matt Aubrey, Mr. Organization for Responsible Governance. And Matt, we got a question for you here. Somebody's asking, I don't know why they're asking you this. They say, hey, Lester, you always ask about the public to think about something. I want you to think about what would happen if we have mandatory evacuations and there's a Category 5 hurricane in Nassau.
So I did hear that we were at Parliament on Wednesday and they did speak out the fact there's going to be a bill that will address that issue. Mm-hmm. What we want to really recognize, though, is I think that we have to understand and look at this very specifically. But the government has decided that they will open this up for public consultation. So an issue like this is important for you to get involved, have your ideas put forward, and make sure that the policy is going to reflect our interests. So you want to make sure that we're looking and thinking about this so that we can all address it.
Right. Now, if somebody asking again, so say you folks are thinking with a pure heart, but the powers that be are not. Our economy is not growing and it will continue not to grow because the powers that be don't want the masses of Bahamian people to be properly educated.
I've heard that so often.
You think that's true? I don't want to believe that,
and I have to not believe it, or else there's no hope. So I choose not to believe that, and I think that we have to overcome this fear of businesses succeeding and get over the resentment of success in business. We need to incentivize businesses, new businesses to start up, give them tax breaks, give them land, whatever it takes. We're very good at giving crown land for major resorts. We are not very good at giving crown land leases for small businesses that could crop up, and particularly there's so
and
many opportunities.
Little startups like Airbnb and Facebook, they were small startups initially. Mm-hmm. Now somebody's asking this question. I don't know if this mm-hmm. is true. They say, let's think about this. The Bahamas is about 140,000 square miles, almost the size of California. That has the sixth largest economy in the world, and they're saying that we should work on our fisheries in a big way.
And I know that I saw there was an IDB effort that was working on revitalizing the sponging efforts. I know that there's been, looking at where we do with our crawfish and what kind of fishing supplies. And I think we have to be conscious of how do we develop it as a resource, but more importantly, as a sustainable resource.
Right.
We can't burn it out.
People who come here enjoy mm-hmm. the fish. We do not have to be exporting that, which is already good.
I agree. We should not export any Bahamian fish. If you want Bahamian fish, you got to come here. Now, Di, I think this is a question that you could address. They say, if we are going to introduce income tax, which I think is a bad idea at the moment, we have to get the filthy rich involved. Now, you think like super rich would be interested in income tax?
Most of the few people I know who you would call among the filthy rich, and I hate that word filthy because I don't know that there's anything filthy about being rich. Depends on how you earned it. But they actually feel that they are undertaxed in the Bahamas, mm-hmm. and they would not.
So they'd want to pay. They'd be interested in paying.
They would not resent.
We need to explore that
higher property taxes or some other sort of tax. What they would demand is transparency and an austerity plan for government. You cannot, if you look at how you run an economy and you think about how you run your own.
So they don't want the government to blow the money.
Right. How do you run your own personal household? You know how much money you take in. You know how much money you have to spend. We keep looking at ways to take in more, and we're not talking carefully enough.
How we get it out there.
Right. And
the Netherlands is taxed at 55%. And they're very happy with that. Is that on average, they just came out with something yesterday that on average
55%?
Folks 55%.
And on average, remind me not to go live
people
there.
But people in Netherlands have over $35,000 in their bank account, in their savings account. I mean, if you get something for it, it makes
and
sense.
And the
it
people
makes sense.
In Canada who are very satisfied, despite that's even in a higher mm-hmm. level. I think you work until July 28th or something in Canada.
What's
the
per capita income in the Netherlands? You know off the top of your head?
Say it again?
The per capita income.
I don't off the top of my head.
Folks, you're listening to Connected with Lester Alcox. We had Matt in the studio. Matt, man, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Don't be a stranger, man.
I'll come anytime you want.
Di, it's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Sorry, I was choking on my own words. Have a great
weekend. You're choking
weekend.
On that talk, 55%. Folks, you guys have a great weekend. Carlton Smith is up next. Thank you.
Thank you.